cherish this one.
Give this movie a big fat parish.
Does that make sense?
I don't know.
Welcome to Cherish or Perish, the show of hot takes and questionable judgment. On this show, we rewatch movies from the past and pass ultimate judgment on their worthiness. Shall they remain cherished or shall they perish? We are your hosts. I'm Amanda Gemmel-Strauss with
Desiree Grobo.
What is up, Desiree? It is our final week of Nicolas Cage month.
Nicolas Cage.
You know, I've been having a great time. You know, in some ways, but I think it's time for a break. You know, yeah. I think we need a little emotional distance, a little space.
Or else we'll get a little too obsessed, maybe. And
yeah, you know, just also reflecting over the year, like, it makes sense because the majority of the movies we do are popular movies of the 90s, early aughts, that we do a lot of Nicolas Cage. Like,
that continues to be
kind of his heyday. Like, yeah, he's been making one or two movies a year for 25 years. So yeah, we've done a lot of Cage, a lot of Cherishes too. Not a lot of Parishes.
Cage situation.
We'll see what happens today. We were talking about Face Off today, which was your number one.
That was my
selection.
Wanted us to do that.
Yeah, they wanted to know Face Off. We're all pulling at our faces right now going face off.
Yeah, you can't see, but, you know, we're doing the right movement.
Yeah, that's happening right now. Did you watch anything else this week besides?
Yeah, I sure did. So I watched, I'm laughing because, you know, I know you know what I watched. I watched The Night Stalker, which is a documentary crime about a serial killer.
About Richard Ramirez, right?
Richard Ramirez, from California, which I'd not, like, I've never been, like, super into serial killer type stuff. So I've not known – I've never heard of this guy before. Like, I'm sure there's plenty of people who knew who he was and knew that this serial killer existed. I did not.
Clearly, I did. You said Night Stalker and I said Richard Ramirez.
You knew exactly who I was talking about. Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely went through, like, a kind of a morbid phase.
But, you know, it's weird. And I also even had, like, serial killer books and, like, my friends. But I was, like, I think I was a poser because, like, I didn't know anything. And I was more fascinated with the female ones than the male ones. Just sort of fewer of them. Like, Elizabeth Bathory, I was a little bit obsessed with for a while. So, like,
I think, yeah, in general, like, serial killer stuff, like, at first it appealed to me in an idea of, like, kind of like, ooh, I'm goth and I'm going to read this. But then, like, the more I read it, I was like, you know, I'm a feminist first and foremost, and most of these men are disgusting misogynists who, like, make a lifestyle of praying and murdering women. So,
I think I got out of it a little bit too, because, like, there was a lot of people who, like, thought that Ted Bundy was, like, really good looking.
Oh, I have friends who find both Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy attractive.
And I have heard that too, Jeff Dahmer. And I was like, I would look at them, and even, like, when they were, like, good photos of them, and I'd be like, I don't think that they have fucking dead shark eyes.
Crazy eyes of a murderer, because that's their fucking murderer.
That's what they are. Yeah, that's what they are. And I'm like, if you can't see that, like, there's, are you okay? Like, if you think that that's a good looking man, like, let's check check yourself out, man.
So. I am definitely more interested in some of the, like, serial killer documentaries that are coming out. I mean, there have been many documentaries made about Night Stalker, books, all these things. But, like, I just feel that true crime is evolving in a way that's so much more, like, in-depth, respectful to victims, victim-focused, restorative justice-focused, as opposed to, like, I'll even watch, like, old episodes of, like, Forensic Files and stuff, and it's so lurid and just gross, like, it's really meant to be, like, kind of a tabloid. So I mean, I haven't watched this, so I don't know if
I don't know if this is necessarily not glorifying.
At the end of the day, it's called
at the end of the day, we're talking about him, you know what I mean? And we're like, it's hard though, because at the same time, like, you need to know these kinds of people exist and the kinds of twisted things that they think to do, and you have to be, not that you should be worried about that stuff all the time, but, you know what, I don't worry about anything ever, really, and it's like, there's stuff, good shit could happen, you know, and, like, you got to be a little bit careful, like, I should be checking to make sure my door is locked, you know, at the end of the night, like, just
little things that, but also just, it doesn't take serial murderers to
Just be a random person that kills you.
Like, I definitely don't want to, like, you know, like, stay in these realms and be like, everyone's a killer. But yeah, I do think it's a good idea to have a, there's people out there like this. They're actually they won't kill you, but maybe they're like a weird person who steals everyone's lunches out of the work refrigerator. Like, weird. People are weird and they do weird shit.
One thing that I had thought of when I was watching this, though, is like, I don't hear really about serial killers anymore.
Well, because we haven't caught any new ones, I guess. They're just out there. I mean, if you look at the statistics, though, particularly among Indigenous women, like the number of missing and murdered Indigenous women is outrageous. They believe that there have long been serial-type killers preying specifically in reservation areas and other places where Indigenous people live, you know, congregate and live. And it is fucking crazy. What an uplifter. We're really starting.
Yeah. What did you watch? Did you watch anything a little bit, lighter?
I started the new Marvel show, WandaVision. That's on Disney Plus. They have two episodes out. I'm definitely intrigued by this show. I'm going to keep with it. Also, I like that the episodes are not super long. Like, the first one was 30 minutes. The second one was 37. So kind of gives you a little, you know, you can get into it a little bit and not feel like you're investing this huge amount of time. I would say my only complaint thus far, like the whole concept, I don't even know how to explain or describe the show. Like, in the first two episodes, you really don't know what's going on, and neither does the characters. That's kind of the point. But the one thing is, like, I'm not a huge Marvel fan. I saw all the Avenger movies, but I have no, I don't understand who these two characters are in the world of the Avengers. Like, I don't remember anything about them. I remember Vision getting born out of a pile of junk. And then I don't remember what happened, you know. And so I feel that this show is trying to tread a very thin line of, like, appealing to people who are very into the Marvel movies and adventure movies, which is a ton of people, and people like me who really have no connection. So I'm curious how things will keep going. But there's a lot of awesome actors in this. Catherine Hahn plays this amazing next door neighbor character. Betty Jo Rupp, is that her name? She played the mom on That 70s Show, Kitty. She's also in this show and is fantastic. So lots of fun acting. And again, it's just intriguing is the best way I can say it. Like, it's very, there's just like things that are happening. You're not quite sure what. So yeah, it's a really interesting show. So I don't know if I like it yet, but I am interested in what
it's what you're watching, but it's not what you're recommending.
Exactly. I have to hold judgment until I've watched it a little more. But yeah, I would say, though, if you aren't like anti-Marvel or superhero, but like do like a kind of a weird, more like mystery, I don't want to say like Lost necessarily. I don't know where the show's going to go, but it does have a lot of like little, what's this mean? What's this mean? This is interesting. But the characters are doing that too, so you don't feel like you're just confused. You're kind of along for the ride with the characters, which is fun.
Sometimes I can find like something like Heroes or those kinds of shows. They get a little, they don't know their full story when they start writing the story. And so then it gets really like complicated. And you're like, wait a second, did you guys lose track? Because I'm losing track.
One thing I like about this show is that, like, Heroes, for example, there's a lot of heroes, right? There was like 8 of them or 6 or there's a lot of people.
They keep finding new ones too. Okay.
So in this show so far, like, there's very clearly you are focusing on Wanda and Vision. Like, you are these characters. The tone is, you really have to watch it. It's so hard to describe what the show is. If you start, it's like you're watching the Dick Van Dyke Show, but it's a witch and a robot wizard or whatever. It's so bizarre. So bizarre. Speaking of bizarre, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Today's movie.
Yes, I am.
Here is y'all's number one pick for Nicolas Cage month. You want to introduce this movie for us?
I will. What we're talking about here is Face Off.
Hello, friends. This is post-edit Amanda, just giving you a heads up that all of the trailers for this movie are terrible, and I am sorry for the scant bit you're about to hear. It's utter nonsense.
I've been chasing this guy ever since I joined the force. He has no conscience, and he shows no remorse. He's the mastermind behind numerous bombings and political assassinations. He has a felony list a mile long: murder, arson, kidnapping, terrorism, you name it. He's the most dangerous and brilliant criminal mind I've ever known. For years, I've been watching him, tracking him, studying his every move. I know his every mannerism, facial tic, gesture. I know him better than he knows himself. And now, after all this time, I finally figured out a way to trap him. I will become him. I don't care if I live.
You're not having any fun, are you, Sean? Try terrorism for hire. We'll blow some stuff up. It's more fun.
Plan B. Let's just kill each other.
Yeah, Face Off came out in 1997, directed by John Woo, and starring John Travolta, Nicolas Cage, and Joan Allen. I mean,
Totally forgot she was in this.
Yeah, I did too, actually. If you haven't seen Face Off, you probably should watch it before you hear us talk about it.
Yeah, or we'll not be able to explain this movie to you.
But if you need just a refresher, because you've already seen it, in order to foil a terrorist plot, an FBI agent undergoes facial transplant surgery and assumes the identity of a criminal mastermind who murdered his son. The plan turns sour when the criminal wakes up prematurely and seeks revenge.
This happened. I was wrong. I think last week I said that this was John Woo's first American movie. I was wrong. He had actually done Broken Arrow with John Travolta and personal favorite, Christian Slater. We have not done a Christian Slater movie yet. We're both big fans. And he had also done a Van Damme movie, Hard Target, I think, before that. So he had done other
I wonder if I still movies. Like Broken Arrow. I used to like that one.
It was funny. I had forgot he had even directed that. And I was, just saw it on the old IMDb. I have definitely seen this movie before. I didn't see it when it came out. But, like, I'd say in the early aughts, you know. Maybe I've seen it a couple times.
Oh, I've seen it a bunch of times, I'm pretty sure. Especially when it first, I think when it first came out, maybe when it first came out to, you know, VHS or DVD or whatever they were
HBO
doing.
HBO or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. I definitely watched it a bunch of times because it was very, when we were going to do it, it was one of the ones I was the most excited about on the list because it was like, I remember loving that. Yeah. So I definitely had seen it a bunch, but it had been a long time. Like it has been over 10 years since I'd seen it.
There was stuff like, obviously I remember who plays who and that they switch faces and like as far as scenes I vividly remember the scene in the church with the doves, and mainly because that is like a classic John Woo image of like people fighting with birds flying everywhere. That's like a Woo
did not
dove.
Remember that myself.
So many other things I just really didn't remember. The thing, my biggest takeaway, honestly, of this movie originally is, like, I didn't remember liking Travolta very much once they do the switch, like, once Travolta is Archer as Caster. So I will say, right off the bat, I was pleasantly
surprised. Well, it's just Travolta as Caster. Like, he's not Archer at all anymore. He's just the body.
Caster as Archer, I guess. When he is portraying Caster as Archer, when he is...
In John Travolta's body.
Yes. When he is the bad guy in John Travolta's body. I did not remember him, like, I forgot how campy, in a fun way, John Travolta can be. And so, like, one of the most pleasant surprises of rewatching this movie was, I really do enjoy him way more in this movie than I remembered enjoying him. I remembered him being, like, because, like, you know, you open the movie and we see Nicolas Cage as Caster, the bad guy. And he's wearing these wild clothes. He's got his gold guns, and his jacket has sound effects. And he's just he's so wild.
Fancy.
Like, he's really caging it up. And like, I'm
surprised it wasn't like a snake jacket. You know, I just expected there to be just even more.
Only reason I think it was not a snakeskin jacket is because I have referenced Wild at Heart 5 million times on this podcast.
We have not watched it.
He has a both a snakeskin jacket, and he has a monologue that goes along with the jacket that he says multiple times in the movie. So I think now it's like you can never have him in a snakeskin jacket again because then everybody's like, did I ever tell you about the personal significance of my snakeskin jacket? Okay, like everybody will do this thing. But yeah, so
he's got gold guns.
It's fucking crazy.
Rings.
He's got his little box full of chiclets and joints
and drugs.
Yeah, it's just great. I really enjoyed that part, and like I remember loving Nicolas Cage playing Caster. I just did not remember enjoying both of them once they do the switch. And
they both, like, they're both like great playing the bad guy, yes. basically.
And I do feel, we talked a little bit about before we started recording, but I had read in the, you know, somewhere that they basically watched each other film and in rehearsal to like meld these kind of personalities. I think they did a great job. I really mm-hmm. did see that the Caster that Nicolas Cage plays feels like the same Caster that Travolta plays. I do feel, though, like we don't get enough time with Sean when, or with Archer as Travolta as Archer until Nicolas Cage starts playing that character. So that one's a little more difficult. But also at the same time, the bit we do see of Sean is he is a drama asshole.
It's like his like coworkers are celebrating the arrest or the demise because they think that he's dead at this point. Nicolas Cage's Caster character, and they're like celebrating because this has been like 6 years ongoing plus, you know, six plus.
And also,
years.
This man killed John Travolta's
and
son.
Killed his son
and almost killed him. Yeah,
and
so, yeah,
and so this is a big deal that they got him. Yeah, he's dead. This is something to celebrate, and they get him like champagne and they're like cheering him and he's just like poo-poos it immediately and you're just like, what a dick.
So okay, this is the thing that bothers me though. So he at the beginning is a real fucking stick in the ass. They even Margaret Cho's in this movie. She's great. I love her.
Hilarious. Most hilarious part. It's
wonderful. She even says like, oh, did you get the stick surgically removed from your ass
when he's come back as
Caster. And the thing though, all of these people seem very emotionally invested in Sean Archer. He's their boss, but also he's gone through a lot of personal tragedy. I think they do think that he's a kind of a hard ass, but also like really have a compassion and respect for him. There's a character called Tito, played by Robert Wisdom, who is an FBI agent and plays essentially what seems like Sean's best friend. He is the man Sean gives his wedding ring to when he goes under the surgery. They have all of these kind of emotional moments. But, like, they feel... You just see Sean, like, dumping his emotions on Tito. You don't really know their backstory beyond coworkers. And then Tito is killed when Caster escapes the weird lab or whatever.
Yeah,
like
he has to kill everybody that knows. He kills
everybody that knows
John
about
Travolta
the thing. Which also, I want to point out, is pretty much every black character in the movie. CCH That's Pounder gets true. Killed in that scene. Robert Wisdom gets killed in that scene. I'm like, that. Like, why did you put all of these other actors in the movie? You're going to kill them off in the first part of the movie.
I mean,
whatever.
That first part of the movie, first of all, is like.
Well, let's talk about first part of the movie. It is 35 fucking minutes in before we even switch the face. I paused. There is still an hour and a half. Hour and 40 minutes left of this movie.
Yeah, this movie doesn't need to be more than 2 hours. It was actually kind of ridiculous that
it was very long, and I do not remember it being so long. And there's so many things that I'm like, what is filling all this time? And there are some things like,
action. There's a lot of action moments that were probably
not
a little long.
A lot of things that conversations, long conversations in the prison. So they switch the faces. We won't get into the whole thing. You know, nobody knows who's who. Archer as Caster, played by Nicolas Cage, is thrown in this bizarre future prison that is on an offshore oil rig.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that happens in that prison, but when I thought about it today, I was like, that whole prison thing could be totally removed. They could have done so many. They could have one quick little conversation with Pollux, and I don't know, somehow he breaks out. They have all these henchmen. There's so many ways. They could have had these two people interact briefly, which is all they do in the prison, and then separate them. But instead, we spend like a half an hour at that prison.
Mm-hmm.
And we just see him getting the shit kicked out of him over and over. And then, oh, this one's also crazy. We spend 35 minutes in that prison. Nothing happens. He jumps off the offshore oil rig. And we do not ever learn how the fuck he gets back to L.A. Like, would he just swim 6 miles in open
I
ocean
think that
to
was
shore?
Weird.
Like... Yeah, just little, like, not even little things, huge things like that to me, just, I just did not remember how much it dragged.
Yeah, it was really, I also noticed, I wrote down, I was like, I didn't realize how much of this movie even happened before. Like, everything I remember was basically after they switched their faces.
Yeah.
You know, almost everything I remembered was after that point. Also, didn't really fully remember, kind of in the way of Long Kiss Goodnight, I didn't fully remember what the big issue was that they were fighting about. You know, like, I didn't remember any of that. So.
And that's kind of the thing. So at the beginning of the movie, we see Castor being played by Nicolas Cage at this point. They have not switched faces. He, his brother Pollux, and their little hench crew set up a huge bomb at the LA Convention Center. So this is the first big action set piece of this chase in which they, at that point, get both Castor and Pollux. They arrest them both. And they eventually go back to that bomb, but what they do is that now Castor, in the face of Sean, he is now like this criminal is the head of the FBI, essentially, goes and defuses the bomb to become, like, the hero. And it kind of does just end meh. And I think that was a big problem for me in this movie, is a big theme they bring up is that these two men have been nemeses forever. They switch bodies. They're living each other's lives. And they both seem to be doing a better job at it.
Absolutely. Especially this terrible, he's a terrible man, Castor. Like, he doesn't speak well to women. He's just awful. Like, what he says to women is just gross. He's gross. But he still is a better father and a better husband sometimes.
Yes. So this
and,
is
like,
my...
it's confusing.
Like, yes. So, Castor Sean goes, goes to his house and he's trying to learn who everybody is. Like, he doesn't have his daughter's name right. Oh my god, that scene with the daughter.
Janie. Oh, that was so gross.
So I do understand why Castor is checking her out. She's a hot girl and he's not
but
related
she's like,
to her.
No, but she's under 20. Like, but she's like a 14-year-old girl.
I think she's supposed to be maybe 17, 18. But even then,
okay.
Her reaction, or non-reaction, that's bizarre. He is visibly checking her out. She's in her underwear. It's one thing if your dad comes in and you're in your underwear and you're like, "Dad, get out of my room." But they have a lengthy conversation. He's checking her out and making intense innuendo. And her reaction is like, "Oh, dad's cool now?" Yeah. I'm like, your dad looked like he was about to molest you. Like, are you not disturbed? Like, what the fuck?
She just seemed confused.
But the biggest confusion to me is he finds... So Joan Allen plays Sean Archer's wife, Eve. She is a doctor... I think she's great. Like, I like the relationship. There's like this tenseness because he's a shitty husband, all this stuff.
I did make note of her ridiculous nightgown, though. I was like,
all
that
of her clothes.
So,
she looks so...
She looks like she looks 100 years older than she
was. Joan Allen is an objectively attractive woman, and they make her look so frumpy in this movie.
So bizarre.
Like, that weird, tight purse. She looked like she had the same hair as she did in Peggy Sue Got Married. It looked crazy. Like, what is happening? But so... Castor Sean reads her diary. I understood it at first just to understand what's happening in this family so he can convince, but he doesn't. He makes the attempt to be...
Do better.
Do better. And my thing is, if it's trying to be like a one-up, like, aha, I fucked your wife, he wouldn't have had to do all of that.
No.
And I just need to make a quick note. He makes this crazy dinner for her... candlelight, quote unquote. First of all, he has lit 500 candles in this house. There are
Where did
so
he even
many
find that many candles.
There are so many candles. It's like you're in the fucking Pope's. I don't know. It's crazy.
So dangerous.
So dangerous. Also, the spread of food on the table is, I actually had to make a list of it because it's insane. Lobster, spaghetti with marinara sauce.
Okay, I didn't remember the spaghetti.
Chicken kebabs and a giant pile of artichokes.
I remember the lobster the most vividly because it's just like, dang.
And the spaghetti marinara is just like a huge bowl of spaghetti noodles and like one cup of red sauce. It's a crazy looking meal. But so much of this is like, why? Why is he doing all of this? And my thing is, Sean as Castor, played by Nicolas Cage, his motivations make sense. He has lost his son. He sees, like, all of these people who are basically, their lives are destroyed in the wake of Castor, including Gina Gershon and her son Adam, which is
actually
Castor's
son. Yeah,
he's
not treated anyone right in his life.
And
right?
So, like, you know, he's in this body and he's, like, an innately good person. And so cannot let these people just become part of the grist mill of Castor. But, yeah, Castor's motivation as Sean just doesn't make any sense. And
No.
I wish they had gone into that more.
He wants to, like, be the hero, and I think that he's just playing a part, and like, I don't even know. But yeah, it was bizarre because he doesn't treat anybody in his life right. So how would he even know how to, what has he ever done a candlelight dinner for anyone?
Is this like sociopath? So I think that he can easily emulate and pretend like that part is it. But like, there are certain things career-wise that make sense. Like, he kills the boss, so he becomes the head of the FBI. Yeah. He does.
I get when he deactivated the bomb, too, so he can get the hero back to deactivating the bomb.
But they could have... Again, there are so many freaking useless conversations. I want... Like, why did Pollux never just say, what are you doing? What is your motivation here? Because he knows that that's his brother. He has been informed. So it's like, there's never... Pollux gives a lot of weird facial expressions and things like that, but there is never a confrontation with his brother where he says, I am confused about the plan. I am confused about what his motivations
actually
are at this
kept
point.
Thinking that maybe, and I didn't remember, obviously it didn't happen, so I was like, I thought for a second that maybe Pollux would turn on him because of the fact that he was like, we're bad guys, we're not good guys, man. Like, you can't.
And that is the thing that I have a problem with this entire movie, is they bring up really strong personal, emotional, dramatic character connections and plot points, but abandon them for dumb action. And to the point where we don't even know how people are related, which brings me to Gina Gershon and Nick Cassavetes.
Which, so, you thought we were dating.
Okay, so when I'm watching this movie, Sean as Castor, at this point, Nicolas Cage, goes to like the henchman's lair. Everybody still thinks he's Castor. Gina Gershon plays this woman, Sasha, who has a son, Adam. And we learn here that it was about the same age as Sean Archer's dead son, Michael. We learn that this is Castor's son. This kind of is a transformative thing. He becomes very protective of Gina Gershon and this child.
Yeah, because he's a good guy, right? And he wants, And he's always actually Jan Travolta before he was Nicolas Cage's, you know, Archer before the transformation, already had a soft spot for Sasha, it seemed. Like, he felt, like, when he interviewed her, it seemed like he didn't think she should be involved in any of this.
Correct.
And you could feel that already.
And I do think that there are some ways that they make Sean look like, yes, he has, like, this blood vendetta against Castor, but in general, he is not, like, a vindictive piece of shit, you know.
Yeah, he's not just trying to put everybody behind bars.
Totally. You know? He's not like the tough ass cop who's just like law and order. Like, he definitely, there's nuance to his character. So my impression was that there's another character there, Dietrich, who is Gina Gershon is Sasha Hassler, Nick Cassavetes is Dietrich Hassler. I thought they were married, that Dietrich thought Adam was his son, and that's why it was a big secret that Sasha didn't tell anybody that Adam was Castor's son. She reveals that she didn't tell anybody because she didn't want her son to be at risk, you know, to have his life threatened. Which also makes sense. But I'm watching this entire movie under the impression that this is a married couple. So there is a point where the FBI, under the direction of Castor as Sean, raids this house. I'm fine with that. There is a point where an FBI agent aims a machine gun at a 5-year-old and opens fire on that child. That I cannot accept. I don't care that Sean is their boss. They would have never done that.
When is it just him by himself that they open fire?
When he's standing in the middle of the room on those glass tiles.
That was from below, though. That was not from...
They looked
not know.
Through the window from a building across the street and saw the child in the room. That's the problem. Like, they have all eyes on this building. They see a small child in this room, and they just fucking blaze into it.
I was under the impression in that moment that the people below didn't know who was above, and then they shot up just at the glass thinking it was somebody bad.
Well, They saw happening in the room with Gina Gershon and Nicolas Cage's character.
I'm just saying that I didn't, from my perspective, they did not know it was the kid.
I thought it was being shot from above also. Okay. So whatever. Either way, it's a complete bedlam.
Yeah.
In this raid, Dietrich gets shot in the neck, and he says to Sasha, like, take Adam, get out of here. And they have a very deep kiss, like a French kiss. And to me, if this was a married couple,
you were thinking,
I found
so
Dietrich a wonderful character. Like, even if he suspects, he probably knows this kid isn't his, but he cares so much about her. No, it's his fucking sister.
Yeah, and then for me, like, because I had, maybe I'd seen the movie before and I remembered. I just missed. She was also, she's, because there was that moment with her and Nicolas Cage, you know, Sean Archer's in the room, and he's like, she's like, you have to go. This is dangerous for our kid. And he's like, I can't go until your brother gets me what you need. And he's only been working with this other guy, right? This bald guy. So like, okay, that's her brother. And so when they kiss in that hallway, I'm like, what the fuck? Why are they kissing?
Well, here's the thing. There were two other men there. And one
he wasn't working with them.
By this point, holy shit, I've been like an hour and 45 minutes.
They were all doing drugs. That's all they were doing.
Yeah, and so there was a dark-haired guy there with, who honestly looked more like Gina Gershon.
Fair.
Like they, and that was who I thought maybe that guy was it, and she was there because this is her husband, and they all are living.
Yeah, it really wasn't as clear as it should be, and it was mostly because of that kiss that it got really confusing.
And like, and so this was another point where I like I paused this movie a few times. I'd go to the bathroom, get a drink. Every single time I paused it, I was just like, I cannot believe how much time is left in this movie. I cannot believe I have gone this far, and there's still an hour.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to rewind a little bit because I wrote down something that we didn't mention. When they're doing that face removal and they're
like surgery part.
The surgery part. They cut his hair after they removed his face, but before they put on the new face.
So there's just hair and what, all of
you know how hair's like glitter. It gets everywhere.
I have many friends who are hairdressers. Hair will literally embed itself in their arms. There's so much hair everywhere. Yeah, you're gonna have this now in your fascia.
Face
like in your face.
The face was an open wound. It was like so
also
ridiculous. You could cut his hair ahead of time.
Like exactly. I am willing to forgo every implausible thing of bullshit that's happening in this scene, but yes, like also we talk about this, they keep Castor alive. I for some reason remembered they switched their faces at that time, and I'm thinking, why the fuck would they give him his face? Why don't you just throw some cold cuts on there? They didn't, like, they kept
they didn't
jar,
give his face. Yeah, no,
and he
didn't.
Steals it. He wakes up, Castor or Nicolas Cage wakes, or no, Castor wakes up anyway, doesn't have a face, it's just meat. And they kidnap the doctor and bring him in to do this thing. And he's smoking a cigarette when he comes in. And I'm like, he would not have any lips.
Without any lips. Without any lips.
He'd have to smoke with, like, his teeth. Like,
but he wasn't. You saw it, like.
Yeah, he had fucking lips. I'm like, we just watched him cut all of this off of his face. Also, he couldn't even have any meat there because they had to have taken the muscle. So,
yeah. I was really appreciating that they were showing us what was going on with those computer graphics, because I think I would have been really lost if they hadn't been like. They were transferring their face. There was this one moment when, like, the computer, like, really obviously old school graphics, it just goes, like, halfway down and just is, like, Nicolas Cage's top half of his face and John Travolta's bottom half. And you're like, that's not how it's happening. We just saw you take the whole thing off.
Whole thing, yeah. You just, like, literally just cut out his face. There are some very funny lines. I think John Travolta has one of the best ones where he's talking to his brother. He's talking to somebody. And he's like, oh, I hate to say something like this. I hate this ridiculous chin, like, talking about this. And there was, like, little things like that I really liked. There was a lot of things I could tell were probably, like, why am I improvised? Like, how did I not remember the word improvised? That I found really enjoyable. But there's just, like, yeah, there's just a lot. I feel like
a lot of
action is happening.
Too.
But nothing is happening in the movie. Like,
right.
Or,
and I just didn't like some of the sexual stuff. It's like, do you really have to have him have sex with his wife? Because then it's again rapey because she doesn't know it's not really her husband. And like, and then the daughter gets almost raped. There's just a lot of really gross sexual stuff in this movie.
And when Eve, Joan Allen, learns that Nicolas Cage is actually her husband with this weird face, she says to him, you have to understand, we've been living as a married couple for a week. Like, she feels guilty for cheating.
Apologize.
I'm like, yes. It's just such a weird thing.
We've been doing this.
Well, the thing also is, like, he didn't even react to that. He never even questioned that. Like, to him, he's, like, rightfully so, taking full blame for the thing that he has put his family through, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, I was just like, it just didn't, like, her motivation of that statement just didn't make any sense. Also, gross, creepy sex thing. So the Archer's oldest daughter, Jamie, again, late teen, we're supposed to see her as being troubled because she wears like fun eyeliner. I don't, you know, it's very.
I know, yeah. Like, and then when she's like at the end, when she's not wearing any of it,
and now she's normal again because her dad killed a man in front of her.
And made her shoot. She shot her dad.
Shot her dad. Yeah. but she goes on a date with a guy played by Danny Masterson, who in the scene attempts to rape her in the car. Caster as Sean drags the guy out of the car and beats the shit out of him. Not like Danny Masterson is a rapist in real life. He's been credibly accused of rape by 3 people, is facing charges and 45 years in prison. So like seeing this happen in this movie, like,
yeah,
it's just,
I didn't remember he was in this movie.
I didn't either. And like the thing is, like, I don't know what the answer is to stuff like that. I don't agree that cutting people out of movies, I think it's ahistorical and ignores the way that we enable
it's just
predators.
So gross that
just deep creeps, like,
it's just like, I like, did he sign on for the movie because he liked it? Like,
yeah, totally, like, yes, gross. Exactly, like, gross. And again though, it shows this scenario of Caster as Archer being a better dad. I don't know. Like, I don't know how Sean would have reacted as himself. Right. Like, I'm sure he would have had kind of a very similar reaction.
Maybe he wouldn't have pulled him out of the window.
Like, would have smashed through the window. Spread him out. But, yeah, and it's also like, you yourself were going to sexually assault this girl. Or, I guess he never really assaults anyone. He just, like, seduces women in, like, the grossest
But
way
he
possible.
Definitely objectifies them.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, objectifies so, them. Yeah. And, like, yeah, it's not like he's a good guy, but it's just, like...
I could eat a peach for hours.
I don't know why that line made me laugh. Like,
it's funny. It is funny.
It's so dumb.
And honestly, if somebody said that to me, like, I would... It's so ridiculous that it would actually kind of work better than almost any other thing.
Honestly, like, better than, like, some...
Oh, did you fall from heaven?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, again, it's just all of these things that get brought up that are a far more interesting story than what we're shown. Like, I want to know a little more about why are these two men motivated to behave the way... Like, actually, not really. I get Sean as Caster. Like, I get Nicolas Cage's motivations in the majority of the movie. But I just don't understand.
Oh, yeah. Why are the bad guys bad guys? What are they fighting for?
Yeah, like, oh, obviously we see Dietrich is very rich. So clearly they're making a lot of money doing what they're doing.
But
yeah,
they're,
like,
terrorists. And typically terrorists have motivations.
An ideology. And, yeah, like, is much like Hans Gruber and the quote-unquote terrorists of Die Hard, they are not terrorists. They use the cover of terrorism to actually just cover up bank robbery.
And I want to, like, note, like, Caster, and Aunt Sophie pointed this out to me, and so, like, I looked it up to, you know, just have the full information, but Caster and Pollux are figures from Greek and Roman mythology.
Yeah.
And that's kind of bizarre, and something, like, looked up the description of that, and it doesn't have anything to do with them, really. They're brothers, but that's it. Like, they're not... They're not heroes, so.
That was kind of my thing, too. Like, the Caster and Pollux thing, I'm like, I remember knowing a little more about that, like, myth. And I do remember it was kind of like a fraught brother relationship or whatever. But at the end of the day.
Yeah, twin brothers. It doesn't sound like they're against each other.
It doesn't go anywhere. At the end of the day, Pollux doesn't change whatsoever as a character.
They don't do anything with that. And so just like, why do you have these names? Like,
yes.
Because it means something, and it could be deep, and it could be meaningful, but, like, we don't see it.
No, he just dies.
There.
He just gets killed, and it doesn't mean anything. Like,
and you understand that they have a very close relationship because they stick together, and he does seem legitimately upset when his brother dies. It's, like, the only time...
It feels
He's
like
sad.
Pollux is the only person in the world he cares about.
Yeah,
because, and he has this very protective relationship. But yes, like, you have introduced this relationship. Like, that's that again. Like, so many human elements that would make this so much more interesting are introduced and then go nowhere. And instead, we see just, like, shit blowing up for no reason, or.
People putting people in weird situations where they have to shoot at their fathers because they don't know who's their dad and who's not their dad. And, like,
so I did like the whole shootout at the church. It's very stylish. It's very cool. But it's like, okay, then end right here. But no, it's like, first this happens, and then a boat chase happens, and then this happens. It's just,
and then,
like,
he's jet skiing with just his feet.
Oh my god, the like that. And also this little boat. it's a little speedboat that for some reason has 50 pounds of fireworks, a harpoon gun, chains all over. It just doesn't make, it's just, like, pick one. If they had just done dumb action, fine. And we have an hour and a half.
Yeah, but then don't name them Castor and Pollux and try to give us all this weird deep shit in it.
Get rid of the fucking, like, that's the other thing. You already have Gina Gershon and the sun. Now you're also going to have Pollux, but you don't end up doing anything with any of these characters with Paul or Castor himself. It all is going happening through Archer, essentially.
Archer, yeah. Archer's the only one that, and like, we can talk about, I don't know if it's time, but we, because I think we both had this note about the ending, because Gina Gershon dies. Gina Gershon dies.
Yes.
Gina so Gershon and so kills. Does, you know, Castor Troy.
Everybody dies.
Except for Archer and the family, you know.
I question if Gina Gershon's character Sasha ever quite understood that Castor was not Castor. Part of me does suspect
she suspected it, I think, at one point. She was looking at their eyes, right? And that was one area you could tell them apart in a way, because one of them had blue eyes and one of them has green eyes. And so you can't, they must have put contacts in these guys. But
also it's like you can change your entire body shape, size, height, hair.
I know, and context. I actually thought it was really kind of funny at the end, because like John Travolta is supposed to be a little bit more frumpy than Nicolas Cage. Yeah. They do surgery to make him a little more buff seeming. And so I was like, when they switched the witch's face, I was like, are they going to switch the body back too?
Or is he going to be like, keep this guy's abs? Like, yeah, can like, I keep like, these? Who's got a bigger dick? Like,
but it is. And that's like, another thing is she has sex with him, and it's just like she doesn't even think. This is not my husband.
Like,
people like, have sex, like, in, like, I mean, if you have sex with a spouse, you know how you have sex. Like, it's, like, and like, it is something you can tell.
If they bring in a new trick or something, you will definitely comment on it. You'll be like, I liked that. That was cool. Whatever. Yeah,
like, I don't know. I didn't
fucking
like
married
that.
People. Like, that's totally how I talk. I'm just like, wow, babe, that was great. You're gonna be so horny. But truly, yes, it is like, again, like, I've watched many John Woo movies, and there are so many, especially like of his Chow Yun-fat Chinese made films, that there is so much humanity, there is so much human story coming through in these movies that are almost entirely about like assassins and hard. Rough cops, but he has a capability of a particularly masculine emotion, of masculine existential crisis. And like, I don't know if just the studios are like, you gotta have more fucking explosions in here. Like,
maybe they cut out all the good. Like,
yeah,
the
and I just feel like
too.
For almost 2.5 hour long movie, there is no reason not to throw in a few more sentences between Tito and Sean, a few more sentences between Eve and Castor. I don't know. And it just left.
Maybe have Castor have a little humanity for somebody other than his brother, or maybe show the brother relationship a little bit more and understanding why they're so close to each other. Cause
yeah. Like, explain, like, why would Castor not just be like, fuck you, Eve, I'm fucking her and divorcing you and leaving our family?
Yeah.
Why is he so motivated to
keep
this
family
together and make them a better family and, like, all this shit?
Like, he could have a wild life.
And why don't we see Castor talking, you know, Castor as Sean, talking to Pollux, and Pollux questioning, what are you doing, and him saying, I don't know. This is a different life. That's like, you know, and this is where Pollux is. This is his shift. It's not so much that Pollux has more humanity. It's that Pollux where, you know, we see Pollux as the weaker of the two. Mm-hmm. He can't tie his shoes. He's nerdy.
This maybe the smarter one.
Maybe smarter, but definitely far less confident, far less bravado. Why do we not see, like, as Pollux seeing Castor, quote unquote, soften, that this is where Pollux, like his, like, there's just these things that, like,
he takes advantage of the fact, because this is what I think was missing, is like, I feel like it would have been quite interesting if Pollux was like, oh, hang on a second, everyone thinks that John Travolta, like, you know, Sean Archer is Sean Archer, even the bad guys. He's like, I can just take over now.
Yes.
I can be the big honcho. But he doesn't even consider it. And, like, I feel like that could have been a cool
Again, like, what was the point of having twin brothers that are different, that one shade, if you're never going to have a conflict between these two people? Like, and even the death is just kind of meaningless. And it's like,
And then, in the end.
Jesus Christ.
Sean Archer brings Gina Gerson's son, Adam.
Home.
And says, "Surprise! I have something to ask you guys." And he just opens the door. I'm like, what do you say at that point? No. A poor kid, like, right? Like, he puts them in a position they can't say no. But
yeah, what are you going to say? Like, oh, hey, I replaced our dead son with this fucking mass murderer. Well, it sounded like he hadn't quite
adopted him yet. But he's like, I have something to ask you guys. And then he just like, this is Adam. He has an orphan now. Let's take him. He's the same age as your brother that died 6 years ago.
What social worker in the world would look at this case like, okay, we got this child, his father's dead, mother's dead, uncle's dead, no other known family. Who wants to adopt him? Oh, the cop who that kid's dad murdered his son, who's the same age, and then that guy went and murdered this child's father. Yeah, we're going to give that kid to him. What? And
also, how, like, he's going to grow up and he's going to eventually understand that this guy is responsible for not only the death of his father, but technically the death of his mother.
His whole family.
And his uncle. And, like, his mother was a good mother. Like, she, I mean, as good as she could have been, probably, in the scenarios, right?
Not going to get into that whole thing, but it's still just like, also, well, Gina Gershon sends him to her cousin. Why doesn't the cousin keep the kid? I mean, maybe the cousin doesn't have the finances, but, like, it's got to be better it's than just the weird. Guy There's who just, murdered her parents.
You don't deal with loss that way, is what I was like. That is not the way to deal with it. You need to go to therapy. You do not need to replace your son with some other kid. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah, and, like, also, a surprise, like, so, you know, he goes back under the knife. They have to get some other doctor somewhere to redo this whole face transplant. Also, at this point, Castor is dead, so I don't know how you're gonna have living tissue off this, but whatever. I'm not gonna get into the science of this. Mm-hmm. He just shows up healed. It's like, what, you just didn't visit your husband for months while he's recuperating in the hospital?
Well, I mean, the first time it didn't take any recovery either. They said that there was no recovery time.
Yeah, I guess.
The type of procedure had no recovery time. Listen, it's fancy procedures that, you know, we don't have yet.
What is so fascinating is we have done, not we, obviously, but in the medical community, full facial transplants have been done. I think there's two or three people that have had...
Yeah, but it's not like 2 minute recovery.
No, it's extremely intense. And like, there's a few, like, really, I think it's called like, there's a documentary series called like The Doctors or Boston Doctors or something. Anyway, it's all just like true stories of this Boston hospital, which is where one of these surgeries happened. And it's fascinating, but so absolutely 100% not. But yes, like, surprise, I'm back, my face is fixed, but also surprise, here's a replacement son. Like, in her face, I have to be honest, Joan Allen's face when that kid walks through the door is pretty on par with what my fucking face
but then she just nodded, being like, yeah, I'm
and
excited.
Then, like, let's Jamie's like, oh, my new brother, I guess, like,
and she's of course back to quote-unquote normal without any
now she's on. Weird eyeliner. So yeah, weird eyeliner. There was a part, like, when they're at Dietrich's house and they're all doing drugs or whatever, like,
it's funny part.
There was something, like, so 90s about this that I was like, I just absolutely, like, want to go back to 1998 and drink vodka sodas and wear ugly polyester clothes and do cocaine. Like, that definitely, I felt that vibe. So intensely in that scene.
I never did cocaine, but there was this one friend of mine's house that wasn't, like, that big, but it felt like that vibe every time I was there. And people were just, like, doing.
People in rooms.
People were
like
doing
things.
Coke.
Yeah.
It just was like, it was fun. Like, even though I wouldn't partake in that part, it's just like,
it was fun then.
It was a carefree,
like,
energy.
Yeah, I could bounce back then. If I did that now, I'd have a hangover for a week. But yeah, like, it did. There was very much a 90s vibe, throw everything at the wall, no class, no taste, it's fine. Like, this kind of over-the-topness. And that, like, worked really well for me. Like, again, Castor's weird clothes or those big shootout scenes with the birds everywhere. That entire scene when he goes and sets the bomb up and he's dressed like a priest. And then
I know,
he
touches
interrupts.
That. Choir girls,
she's in the front row. There are, like, none standing there. No one is gonna say anything about this fucking weird priest that no one knows. That just like
maybe not. He's a priest, right?
I don't know. Well, actually, you know what? I'm saying this, and I'm like, oh yeah, never mind. No, nobody would say anything. Never mind. No one has any interest in saying anything. I just. Is there anything we have not talked about?
No, I think I got everything I wanted to say.
Talked about Robert Wisdom, talked about Margaret Cho. There are a lot of great supporting actors in this movie. Just all over the place, on the henchman side, on the good guy side. Though I found the entire prison sequence useless, John Carroll Lynch plays like the sadistic guard, like kind of like the main guard. Yeah, I thought he was great. He always pops up and stuff. And,
he's always like kind of a dick too.
He plays like a... like sadistic school principal, like very benign looking, but like totally freaking sadistic freak. Like, I just thought he did that really, like, yeah, like bureaucratic violence. Yeah, like, did that really well. And again, like, the acting is the part I remember liking the least. And to me, watching it again was the part that was by far the strongest. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't think that I could have even made it through this movie without. Like, the casting choices on every level, not just
Travolta. Yeah, and, like, even John Travolta, the way, like, you know, you remembered it not being good, but I'm sure you agree now. Like, him pretending to be Castor Troy, like, that, you know,
yeah.
Being Castor Troy was probably one of my favorite, that I can remember, John Travolta.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I love Saturday Night Fever. Like, that's, like, a fantastic.
I haven't seen one. But
Pulp Fiction, I liked him in Pulp Fiction, but as far as...
Pulp Fiction. But he's only in that movie 10 minutes. He's a bad guy in this, though. And John Travolta isn't playing bad guy very often. And I thought he did a really good job doing, like, that evil kind of, like, smirky, like, smiliness and, like, not as crazy looking as Nicolas Cage's as Castor Troy.
God, that hair that he has.
And those eyes that he does sometimes is... That was the face I gave myself for our post-star thing. So.
We'll have to, like, take pictures of us doing our best, like, Nicolas Cage Castor faces and put them on there somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, like, I agree. Like, I think about... I think Pulp Fiction came out in 1994. This came out in 97. So this was, like, right when John Travolta was, like, coming back on the scene. And I think of other movies he made at this time, like...
Like The Broken Arrow?
Broken Arrow, Michael, where he played the angel. Michael. A lot of things. I do believe he's, like, the hero in Broken... I really don't remember enough. I don't remember
if it's Christian Slater or John Travolta for sure. He might be the bad guy again.
He might be. But, yeah, I really was...
I love this time of action movies. And, like, it just, even Christian Slater is another one. I don't know if you ever watched Hard Rain. That reminded
me. I never saw that one.
That one was, like, sort of around the same time and kind of reminds me of these movies. Yeah, John Travolta, like, came back hardcore with action around this time.
For sure. And, like, just, yeah, I did really like him in this role. I felt that he did enough camp, he did enough menace, but at the same time, like, he makes Castor's character a little more clear. Like, I find him a little more seductive. I find him a little more compelling and manipulative as
John Travolta. Personally, I find him to be a better looking man than Nicolas Cage.
I think both of these are handsome men. And they were at this time. Handsome. But I do think the look of, like, Nicolas Cage's, his hair, the clothes... There's so much. Who is that stupid pickup artist guy? He had his own show, Mystery. He wears, like, fuzzy top hats and eyeliner and stuff. Like, that's what he looks like to me. He's like a late 90s pickup artist, like Neil Strauss's The Game, like bullshit. Which, I mean, I guess at the time a lot of guys thought was, like, a real thing that worked. So I guess if you were a dude writing this movie, you would show women, like, I will say this also. Of the women who, like, kind of go for it, one is an FBI plant.
She's pretending to go for it.
Who's pretending? One is a young girl who thinks she's talking to her father. Like, another is trapped on, like, bleacher riser singing. Like,
yeah, which is why I think it's worse and grosser, is because he's not even hitting on women that are, they're not women that are attainable women.
But like you said, like, he just objectifies pretty much every woman that comes to his thing. Which then is kind of like, what's up with Gina Gershon Why
was she in
again?
Him?
We don't get into it, and we only see her having affection for Castor after he's actually Sean and being like a nice person.
And Aunt Sophie pointed that out when she was watching. She's like, I don't really get why she was involved with him because he doesn't seem to care about her at all. Like the real Castor.
I don't know, got like drunk or fucked up and hooked up and then she got pregnant.
Yeah, and that's what I said to Aunt Sophie. I was like, it only takes one time, but it's clear that she has a relationship with him.
Or at least like feelings towards him, and that would not make any sense. I mean, this idea that like a woman would have this affection just because he's the father of the child. I think many women are like, ah, well, I love my son, but the father's a fucking piece of shit or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of
I just don't see the son being enough of a motivator to keep her having these types of feelings about Castor, unless her feelings were fear motivated, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
No.
So, it just doesn't make any sense. Ready to judge? Yeah, you know, I perished.
I did too. I perished as well.
I was shocked. Thought I was going to go in and have such a great time. I thought this was going to be Con Air again. I thought this was going to be.
We were talking about last week. I think I said this was going to be my favorite one on our list. I was like, I'm most excited about this one. Literally, like Con Air for sure was, if I have to choose, that was probably my favorite.
Oh, to rewatch any of these? Absolutely. Con Air, I could watch every week and have a good time with that movie. I was just shocked. Like, I love John Woo. I love all of these actors. I like the idea of what's happening here, but just, I don't know if it's just the bad editing. I don't know if blame writing.
It needs to be remade, I think, maybe. Let's remake it. It's a cool, fun idea of a undercover cop going in as a criminal with his face. I think that's
honestly,
a cool
they
idea.
They could have done fucking narrative backstory. They could have opening credits are in the room where they're doing the face switch. They explain, oh, he killed his son. We have a flashback, bada bada bing. And then now we're in the prison. We're 10 minutes into the movie. Why did it take 35, 40, more than that? It took almost 45 minutes to get to that prison. And it's just, again, like, I don't think it's acting. I don't even think the writing is bad. I think it's bad editing because there are so many things that happen that they don't pick up again. And it's just,
maybe they filmed this all and then they just cut out all the wrong things.
That's what it felt like. They cut out huge things to put in that crazy ass boat chase or whatever. That is what
I actually started to tune out at that point. Like I was watching still, but I went on my phone. I'm like, we know how this is going to end.
Yes. And I'm like, the fact that you cannot amuse me with a boat race, with fireworks shooting out of it, someone getting hit with a fucking anchor, and then barefoot water skiing on a chain, and I'm bored. Like
That is so true. I didn't even think about it like that. It's just like, normally action's all fine, but they just didn't do it right.
Yeah,
they just didn't
Like, when you think about Con Air, this is a movie that committed to action. They're like, here's the emotional motivators. This kid and this guy, Baby-O. These are the two things that we are going to tell you what is important to this character, and then we're going to have him do a bunch of crazy-ass shit. And it works so well. Because the thing he says, they crash on the strip, then there's the crazy fire truck fight, and all this stuff keeps going and going and going, and you're in it for the whole time.
Yeah, you're glued to the TV, even.
And in this,
it's different.
Like, they couldn't decide. And so they made it, if they had cut out any of the emotional stuff, it would have been a great action movie. It would have been an hour, 40 minutes long, and I would have been here for it.
They really needed to give Nicolas Cage a motivator. Like, Castor Troy needed a motivator. And that was the biggest thing that was a miss. Because he didn't have a reason.
Yes, because Sean
for anything.
Is just desperately trying to get his face back, get back to his family, get rid of Castor, fix the problems that have been extant since the day his son died. Yeah, we don't. Who the fuck knows what Castor wants? Other than just chaos, I guess. But at that point, like, you're now the head of the fucking FBI. So what's the long-term plan? Also, like, he all of a sudden replaces all of his dead officers with a guy with a weird Blofeld scar on his face. And the other guy wears, like, black turtlenecks. And, like, nobody is questioning, like, why all of a sudden Sean has henchmen as the head director of the FBI. I don't know. I was disappointed, and it made me sad. If it didn't make you sad, or if our opinions made you sad, or if you just have more things that you want to point out to us about this fucking fucked up movie, get at us at cherishorperishpod.com. That's our website. You can find all of our episodes there. You can comment on them. You can send us emails. You can send us recommendations of movies you want us to talk about. All that fun stuff. cherishorperishpod.com. Are you ready for lightning round. Oh, actually, no, before lightning round. Takeaways. Any takeaways?
Oh, I do not. I never have takeaways, Amanda. Every time you ask me, do I have them ever?
Here is a thing I cannot believe we didn't talk about. That fucking face swipe. Oh, Sean Archer's thing. He does it to his son. He does it to his daughter. He does it to his wife.
It doesn't feel good. He will be
in the middle of talking about something, like, I guess, stressful, and he will take his hand and wipes it down their face. And he does this throughout the movie. He does,
but it signifies that it's him.
That it's him. But oh my God, I fucking hate it. And my takeaway is, don't touch my face. Do not touch my face when I am talking. I
know, don't shut me up with your hand going down my face.
With your hand. It is the equivalent of putting up a talk to the hand. It is the equivalent of talk to the hand, except for the hand is touching your eyes and mouth. Like, ugh. Don't touch my face. That is my takeaway.
That's
don't
good
touch one. My face. Lightning round. Are you ready for lightning round?
I am ready for lightning round.
Hot topics, fast opinions based on the movie we talked about today. Lightning round. Clearly, you know how I'm going to feel about this. Someone putting their hand on your face when you're in the middle of a conversation. Clearly a pair.
Clearly a pair. It's a pair for me too. Who wants that?
Who the fuck wants that? Just Sean Archer, and apparently.
Well, he doesn't have it happen to him, so.
That's true. You don't see Eve sticking her hands in his eyes.
Oh, he's the only one that does it.
Asshole. Team phases.
Cherish. Go for it. Figure out who you are.
Yeah.
Experiment with your face and your makeup and your hair.
Eyeliner. It's just hair color. Do whatever you want.
And wear whatever you want.
Wear whatever you want. Leave your kids
you
alone.
You can.
Because you can. Yeah, exactly. Like, of all the things you're going to experiment with, clothing and makeup is, like, literally the least problematic.
Yeah, don't do drugs, though. I do think that, you know,
experiment with some drugs, but definitely
later in life. Wait till you're done developing.
Do not huff solve it. If you're going to experiment with weed, alcohol, do not huff Freon, gasoline, chemicals, VCR head cleaner, aka poppers. Just stay away from huffing. That's all my advice to the children. Don't huff.
Might be easy to get to, but don't do it.
Don't do it. Live birds in a place of worship.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it depends on your place of worship. I don't want to be the altar boy at that church, but you know what?
No.
Hey.
Put whatever you want in worship
places. Let the
places.
Birds do what they want. And finally, surprise adoption.
Parish.
I'm going to say parish. No one should be surprised. Not the children.
Remember
the
we did
adopting.
Like surprise pets too?
Yeah,
like
surprise
of course,
pets. Even worse.
No surprise. Yeah, nothing? Surprise adoptions are worse than surprise pets.
Yes, like nothing that needs to be kept alive other than like maybe a plant. Like if it needs to be fed, if it has to be enrolled in school, like these things should not be surprised.
You should be able to decide that.
Yeah, that needs, all people need to be on board with those decisions.
Surprise adoption. That's so wild to me.
Jesus Christ. Any recommendations for the people?
Yeah, actually, I watched the movie Enola Holmes, which is like
Enola Holmes.
Enola Holmes, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the younger sister of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, I never watched it. I've only seen it on...
It's got Helena Bonham Carter, Harvey... Henry Cavill?
Oh, the guy that played Superman.
Oh, he's so good looking.
Yeah, he's very cute.
He's gay, I think, but that's okay. I wouldn't be able to date him anyway. But I was just like, man, that guy is good looking. And this got the girl, Eleven, from Stranger Things.
What is her name? It's driving me crazy. Yeah.
But she looks like a young Elizabeth Perkins to me. Like,
yeah, I've seen the cover, like the... It's advertised to me heavily on Netflix.
It was good. I enjoyed it. I didn't know it was a movie until I started it. And then
I thought it was a series. Yeah.
I thought it was a series too, which is why I actually hadn't, you know, because I don't want to pick up a new series all the time. But last night I was like, I want to watch something a little bit different than just reality TV. And so I was going to pick up that series. And then I was like, oh, it's a movie. And like, I was kind of excited.
Nice. Actually, I'm way more interested in watching this now. Yeah, same. Don't want to pick up a new series. Despite that, all I've watched this week is series. what I watched. This is like a mini series. It's only 6 episodes. It's on Netflix.
I've seen that it's advertised to me.
It's called We Are the Champions. It was produced and narrated by Rainn Wilson. And it just makes me feel so good.
Really?
It just feels good to watch the show. It is about off the beaten path competition. So the first episode is about cheese rolling. And there's this place in England that for hundreds of years has rolled a cheese down a hill and people run after it. It's like a huge part of this town's culture, about this community's culture. And like, they follow this one girl. She has won 3 years in a row. She's going for her fourth. And she will be the first woman in the history of this ever happening to win it. And then the second episode is about chili eating contests. I've only watched the first three. And then the third episode is about Bronner Brothers Hair Show, which I watched. There's this great documentary that Chris Rock did a while ago called Good Hair that talks quite a bit about Bronner Brothers, but this episode takes place, like, talks specifically about people competing. Bronner Brothers is like the preeminent black hair show. It is a humongous industry event. They have these crazy displays and like competitions of people doing hair where like hairdressers will suspend themselves and their models in like these hard, like it's wild. It's like a really, really, really cool event. Each of these episodes just talk about these people and like their communities in these spaces, and it's just awesome. Just people doing weird, cool
stuff.
It just felt so good. I really, really, really recommend the show. Especially as a break, you know, just like a little break to be like, oh yeah, people are still doing like cool stuff out there. I'm like,
and then maybe you find stuff, like a thing that you're like, I kind of want to get into that.
You know what? It made me think, like, last week we were talking about adaptation and, you know, like finding your passion and finding the things that bring you joy or motivate you in life. And like, there's this one lady in the chili pepper eating contest who like talks about her story of her and her husband getting sober and how they found this community among chili pepper eaters, many who are also in recovery. And it's just so fascinating.
That's like, so cool. Yeah.
The ways that people find each other. So yeah, I highly recommend it. It's called We Are the Champions. And yeah, I think I have 3 episodes left. I'm excited to watch them.
See what other cool competitions there are.
Yeah, totally. There. I looked ahead to see what they were. One was dog dancing. I don't know what that is. Very excited to watch it.
Sounds so exciting.
Totally, totally, totally. Speaking of exciting, next week we are getting into
next week
the month of romance. We're going to be kicking it off with,
oh yeah, February.
This is a very, I don't know, this is a heady context. So this is, next week we have 2 movies. They are contemporary romantic comedies set in the early 1960s.
That are both musicals, too. They're musicals.
Yeah, actually, they're both musicals. So yeah, Down with Love and Cry Baby. This will be our first John Waters movie, I believe, on the list.
Oh, my gosh. And I do really love John Waters.
I love John Waters. I actually just watched Multiple Maniacs with the commentary recently just for fun, just to hear John Waters telling stories. And I also think our first Renee Zellweger and Ewan McGregor appearances, who star in Down
with Love. I have to
say,
or confess, not a big Renee Zellweger fan.
I have seen
I have a lot of her movies.
Like, yeah, I'm trying
like
to
a lot of her movies, but not a big fan of her.
I don't know if I have enough of an opinion about her.
Maybe that's it. Like, maybe it's like I don't have a strong opinion against her necessarily, but it kind of bothers me sometimes when she's like the star of something because I don't love her. And so I'm just like, that could have been better for me if it was somebody else.
Feel if it's time that this movie came out. Like, she was in everything. And now
yeah,
I can't
Chicago
remember.
And like,
I can't remember the last time. Bridget I think the last Jones. Movie I saw her in was Cold Mountain. And that was like 15 years ago or something crazy. Maybe
wasn't she just in a new Bridget Jones more recently than
I
that?
I was not into all the Bridget Jones movies.
No, me neither. That's maybe one of the reasons why I don't like Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, she that's the other thing. She did a lot of movies that I just were not in my wheelhouse. I really don't watch a lot of romantic comedies. Interestingly, though, I have seen Down with Love. I remember watching this movie multiple times when it came out on like HBO or something and enjoying
it.
Very curious to hold up Cry Baby. That is one of those movies I have watched dozens and dozens of times. Watched with the commentary. Watched all of the making.
Crybaby was why I got into John Waters, even, actually, for me. Like, I really loved, and like, I was a big fan of Johnny Depp. That's the biggest thing for this movie, is like, this is when I started getting into Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. And then I started looking up other John Waters movies because I thought that was so fun and so different. It was maybe this one paired. He does Serial Mom, right?
John Waters, yes.
Yeah. And so I think it was this one paired with Serial Mom that made me go deeper into the history of the John Waters movies, and which are very different, but I still really liked them all. So
I would say Crybaby. Crybaby was the movie I believe he made after Hairspray, and this was like by far his largest budget movie, and also like kind of like he started making a little more commercially accessible movies. Hairspray was, I feel, a very commercially accessible movie, but Crybaby and Serial Mom, particularly to me, were much more.
And that's why those ones reached me first. You know?
Oh, well, God, if you tried to watch freaking Pink Flamingos first, oh my God, like, there's no way. If you tried watching, like, even some of the stuff that never, like, there are some of his movies that did not get released until like 2007. I don't think.
Yeah, I remember in LA, we went and did like this John Waters, like, they were showing all these. Yeah. Unwatched John Waters movies. We went to that, and it was cool. I mean, it's definitely
It's really interesting to hear just kind of his background in film and how he got started and like the people he's worked with and how he made his early movies. And it's really pretty inspirational. It's pretty awesome to, you know, talking or having watched Mondo Maniacs, he references Tangerine. That movie had come out right around the time he had done the commentary, and just talking about like the ways that movies can continue to be made using iPhones or whatever, you know, and like was the same way that many people were making their first movies back then, which was using weird like TV news film stock and like all these types of weird cameras that were affordable at the time. So I'm really excited to talk about these movies. Is there anything the people need to know about before we get out of here?
I think that they got everything they needed, you know? We're very excited for some of the movies we've chosen for coming up. There's more than just Down With Love and Crybaby coming up, you guys.
We got to keep on rolling every week with new movies that we're going to be talking about. I guess all I need to let you guys know is I just love you so deeply.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Got a shout out from a friend I haven't talked to in a while. He had been on a big road trip. He like binged our episodes. It was so awesome to hear.
Nice. Shout out
to
him. So
yeah, we love hearing from you. If there's things you want more of, things you want less of, things that we've never done that you wanna tell us about.
Yeah.
Check us out. CherishBearishPod.com. That's it. Yay, goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Face off.
Face off.
'Wanna take his face?
Yes.
His face.
Oh.
The face